a statement, as we said last week, that acknowledges that God is God over everybody, not just of believers, but He's God over everybody. Whether people acknowledge Him or not, He's still God. Okay, and ultimately, everybody, believers and non-believers, are going to have to answer to Him. Okay, whether they believe it or not, okay, they're going to have to answer to Him. And so as he's writing this to them, okay, the other part of this is there is also a message not just of encouragement, but a message of, you know, realizing some lessons here that for those who are believers and what we need to concern ourselves with when it comes to wealth and riches and so forth. Now, again, as we've been saying all along in this part of our study, James is not saying that there's anything inherently wrong with being wealthy. Okay? That's not the point. The point is, what are you doing with the wealth that you have? Because we have to understand it this way. Otherwise, it kind of really messes up all kinds of theology, which I think is right, okay? If we don't believe that God is the one who gave the wealth to begin with, you say, all right, then would God give wealth to believers only to punish them because they're not supposed to have wealth? If we believe that everything that we have comes from God, in other words, and we'd have to believe if a person has wealth, then it came from God. He blessed them with it. Okay? Now, it's up to that individual to choose and decide what they do with the blessings that God gives. And so there are some warnings here within what James is saying to anyone who has wealth, whether they be believer or non-believer. And last week we began looking at the verses here in chapter 5, the first six verses of this. And what we're looking at is what James is really laying out here, four deadly sins, okay, that he's addressing to these rich folks, okay? And again, in particular to these rich non-believers. Last week we talked about sin number one, which is hoarding, okay? Verses 2 and 3 here, he says, your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. And so we were discussing that whole issue of hoarding and storing away and what becomes wasted and becomes for nothing where it could have been used for the glory of God. Okay? Now, we finished up that particular sin and talking about that part with this statement that Tommy makes. He says, at judgment, the evidence of wealth unused but merely kept for the sake of having it will argue powerfully for the condemnation of the rich, because it will testify that their priorities and affections in life were seriously skewed. So again, it's not the issue of having wealth, it's the issue of hoarding it, storing it away, you know, just in case, which also part of that sin is involved in relying on self for security rather than relying on God. So I got to hoard this, I got to get as much and keep as much as I can, so that I will be secure, and not using what a person has been given by God in order to bless other people and to further the work of God's kingdom. Okay? Now, sin number two is withholding wages from the poor. Verse 4 here. Look at what he says here. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. Okay? The Old Testament is very, very clear on what God thinks of this particular sin, that is, of oppressing the poor. All right? Let's begin over in Deuteronomy 4. Let me get somebody to read for us Deuteronomy 4, verses 4 through 15. And let me get somebody else to turn over to Leviticus 19 and verse 13. Those two passages we want to take a look at as we begin this morning. Deuteronomy 4, 14 and 15. And Leviticus 19 and verse 13.
And the Lord commanded me at that time to teach you statutes and judgments, that you might observe them in the land which you crossed over to possess. Take careful to heed yourselves, for you saw no form when the Lord spoke to you at Horeb, out of the midst of the fire.
No, that's not the right place. I got the wrong one here. My mistake. I'll find it. Well, I'll give you the right passage later. But anyway, what he's saying here, you shall not oppress a hired servant, he says, or a sojourner. Okay? Do not mistreat them. Whether they're a brother or whether they are a foreigner. If they're working for you, do not oppress them, he says. Leviticus 19 and verse 13. Anybody find that one?
Do not defraud or rob your neighbor. Do not hold back the wages of a hired worker overnight.
Okay. Do not defraud or, what's the word he says? Or rob, okay, a hired servant. His wages shall not be kept by you overnight until the morning. Okay, so, you know, here God is expressing how He views when we're oppressing, you know, the poor, we're oppressing a worker, in other words, even withholding their wages overnight. He's saying, that's the same as far as God is concerned as robbing them. You're taking away their livelihood. And God considers that to be the same as robbery. And the cries of those who are so oppressed are going to reach the Lord. When he wrote this particular text, James probably had this idea in mind, okay? That God's view of withholding payment from someone, again, keep in mind, you know, typically today, when we, you know, we're getting paid and so forth, when do most people get paid for their jobs? How often? Either weekly or in some cases it's every 2 weeks. Okay? Every 2 weeks. And here, God is telling the Israelites, don't withhold it until the morning. You pay them every day. You see? Chuck? I don't think that the key here, that, you know, we're talking about paying them every day. That was the custom back then. That's how they did things. I don't think that God's point is you've got to pay someone every day or you're sinning. I think his point is, again, you've got it. Don't withhold it. See, don't make them suffer. They're poor and they're struggling, you know, every day to make ends meet, and you've got their pay and you're withholding it from them when you could pay them. See? And look at what James, when he writes this in verse 4, look at what he says. The wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. Now, here's an interesting thing about that particular phrase, okay? The Lord Almighty, or some of your translations probably say Lord of Hosts. Anybody have that in there? Okay, Lord of Hosts. That description or title was used frequently by the Old Testament prophets. And what it referred to, it basically was an implied threat, because it basically was a title that describes God as at the head of his armies, getting ready to bring his vengeance on those who have been oppressing other people. So when James uses this term, Lord of Hosts or Lord Almighty, he's using this purposefully as a threat against those who are oppressing the poor, saying, look, the Lord of Hosts, and you just kind of picture this, he's saying, you know, he's standing there in front of his armies ready to bring his judgment upon you, you who are oppressing the poor. Judgment, you will face judgment. The rich, by violating God's law in this way, by oppressing the poor, by not paying the wages that are due them and so forth, they have placed themselves squarely in God's sight for judgment. Okay? In other words, they will face His wrath. It does not, in other words, you know, it changes the idea that some people have of God, doesn't it? That, you know, well, God, you know, He kind of got everything going. Yeah, I believe in God, and He's kind of set everything in motion. Now He's, you know, an old man sitting up in heaven somewhere not paying a whole lot of attention to what's going on. And no, he's paying attention to everything that is going on. And he especially hears the cries of the oppressed, you see, and he is ready to exact his vengeance on those who are guilty of doing so. So, you know, James gives this, you know, very, very hard warning here to those who are oppressing the poor. And I think, Chuck, you said it well. It's a matter of they have it, okay? They're just not paying it. They're not giving out what is due to those who have done work for them. Okay, Ray, you had a comment?
Combine that effort to get the union in and try to get the union I've always been opposed to this other. But I guess if I had a whole lot to start with, but I always wanted to make sure that I was treated right and fairly. And I'm thankful for that. There are men who stood up for the rights, you know, and even the child they were lost.
Right.
Well,
they may not be ashamed of themselves, but they will answer to the Lord for it, and that's James's point here. You know, they're yeah. Oh, they should be. They should be actually. And again, your point is right that kind of stuff that James is addressing is still going on today. So, does that not make what James has written all these couple thousand years ago relevant to us today? Because it's still going on today. Same kinds of problems. Okay, the third sin that James addresses is an extravagant lifestyle. Okay, an extravagant lifestyle. The first part of verse 5 really identifies the sin here. Okay, look at what he says. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. Now, the self-indulgence really is what says it all here. Okay? The problem is, again, not in having the abundance, but the problem is that they had the abundance and didn't share it with those who were in need. Okay? They had it and kept it for themselves. Go back to the first sin, that hoarding. Okay? But here, it's not just, in other words, the sin of hoarding is kind of multiplied because not only are they keeping it for themselves, but they know there are people who are in need and they're not helping them. And they're living this extravagant lifestyle. James was most likely, thinking of the story that his brother told of the rich man and Lazarus. We find over in Luke chapter 16. Some interesting things about this story as Jesus tells it. Okay, you turn over there and look at what Jesus is saying about this, but notice as Jesus tells this story that the rich man, Jesus did not condemn him just simply for being rich. Okay? That was not his problem. Okay? His condemnation came because the beggar sat at his gate begging, while he sat and had more than enough for himself. Lazarus was sitting there at the gate, and what does it say? How does it describe him? Okay? The dogs were licking at his wounds. He longed to have what? The crumbs, just the crumbs that would fall off the man's table, but he wouldn't even allow him to have that. Okay? And all the while, he is living in abundance. He has plenty, but he won't share it with someone who is in need. The rich that James speaks to, most likely, if they were to read this or be told about it, most likely would find nothing wrong with their behavior at all. Right. Their perspective probably is that their wealth was the result of their shrewdness and their hard work. And they deserve that wealth and so forth. And so therefore, their wealth was theirs to do with as they pleased. And that is, I think, a common perspective that people have today about their wealth, isn't it? Careful if you agree with that. Okay? Just be careful. James, of course, sees it differently. Okay? The second half of verse 5 describes how James sees these people who are living this extravagant lifestyle. And look at the description that he gives. They have fattened their hearts for the day of slaughter. Okay? They're living this extravagant lifestyle and not sharing with those who are in need. He says they fatten their hearts for the day of slaughter. In the Old Testament, the idea of a fat heart was a sign of someone who was ignoring God and refusing to follow God's laws. Okay? For instance, Isaiah chapter 6, verse 10, the prophet Isaiah says, "Make the heart of this people calloused, make their ears dull and close their eyes, otherwise they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed." You know, what is Isaiah saying here? He doesn't want people to be saved? No, that's not his point. His point is God, through Isaiah, knows there are many of his people, the Israelites, that's who he's talking about, okay, who their hearts are calloused towards God's will and his word. They're not listening. They don't want to listen. They don't want to obey God. And, of course, God knows that. Okay? And they would only, because their hearts are so callous, they would only become more callous to God's will and purpose. The more they hear his word, the more the harder their heart is going to become. The psalmist in Psalm 119 and verse 70 says, "The insolent smear me with lies, but with my whole heart I keep your precepts. Their heart is unfeeling like fat, but I delight in your law." Okay? You see the contrast here. When he talks about this idea of having a fat heart, okay, it's one that is immovable by God's word. Okay? It doesn't feel anything. It's callous. You know what calluses are, right? Okay? You get those calluses on your fingers, your hands, or what have you from doing stuff, and you don't feel stuff anymore. And that's how he describes their heart. The interesting thing about this is that really what James is saying is that these rich folks that are behaving this way, they're like cattle that are out, you know, just grazing in the field and gorging themselves on everything that they can eat, not realizing that what they're doing is they're preparing themselves to go to the slaughterhouse. Because that's where they're going to end up. You see? So they're out there just eating, and you know, if you were in the mind of a cow, you'd be going, "Wow, look at all this grass. I can't wait. I'm going to eat as much of it as I can," not realizing that, yeah, the fatter you get, the closer you become. The fatter you become, the closer you get to the slaughterhouse. Because that's the whole purpose. See? Get them fat as you can, and then slaughter them for the meat. And James is basically comparing these rich folks who are behaving this way to cattle who are, unbeknownst to themselves, preparing themselves for the slaughter. And that's what they will, that's what will happen to them when it comes to facing the Lord of hosts, who we said a moment ago is standing at the ready in front of his army, to bring his vengeance on those who are wrong. Okay? Sin number four, the oppression of the righteous. Verse 6. Okay? One of the things, if you look at this verse, and the wording that James uses here, "You have condemned and murdered innocent men," or some translations say the righteous, okay, "who were not opposing you." And, you know, James, again, he follows the pattern of the Old Testament writers here that links the idea of those who are poor with those who are righteous or innocent. Now, does that mean that they are without sin? Is that his point? No, that's not his point, in saying that these people have never sinned. We know that's not true, okay? Because all of us have sinned. But again, like the Old Testament writers, it's basically showing here that, you know, look, people that are poor, those folks who are oppressed, tend to rely on God more than those who are rich who don't seem to feel like they need God. Okay, Brian? We're coming to that. Yeah, we're coming to that in just a moment. Yeah, you're exactly right. Hold that thought with me, okay? Look at James's description of their behavior. And notice how graphic it is here. Right? What is James basically accusing them of doing? Okay, you have condemned and murdered. Okay? Innocent men who were not opposing you, he says. Had they actually murdered people? Well, do what?
Maybe.
Possibly so. But again, let me remind you that the rich here that he's talking to are non-believers. Okay? Now that, the reason that I think that's important is because though I'm sure there probably were believers who were guilty of the same thing, non-believers would certainly have no conscience whatsoever about that kind of behavior. Okay, Colonel? And certainly, you know, I think it's not a very big stretch at all to think about those who may have starved to death, their workers, you know, not paid them and so forth, but were just starving to death. And it's not unknown, okay, even within the scriptures, for the rich to murder the poor in order to acquire their property. In fact, probably one of the most famous cases in the Bible of that is who? Anybody remember? Yeah, Ahab and Jezebel. Okay, they murdered Naboth in order to acquire his vineyards. Okay, yeah, you know. So, you know, and again, keep in mind, James is writing primarily in this section to non-believers, but we see through that building, these are people who are supposed to belong to God. Okay, you know, we know Ahab and Jezebel were far from that, okay? Sure, they're guilty of murdering, physically murdering. Whether you hold back the money and they can't buy, you know, the food or medicine or whatever, whatever the way, or working them, just basically physically working them to death, you see? Like, reason why we have a lot of the laws that we do, as you mentioned earlier, so you got to give workers breaks and so forth and all, so that you're not, you know, they're not, you know, falling down dying in the factories or what have you because of the heat and, you know, and so on and so forth. There are people actually have died because of the working conditions that they've been in. And that's the kind of thing that James is addressing, and certainly some would be guilty of that. But also, as we've already discussed with his statements that he made in chapter 4 and verse 2, that murder can be figurative. Okay? In other words, as assassinating someone's character, as we talked about, slandering that person, and so forth, would basically, as far as God is concerned, be the same thing. Remember the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 5, you have heard that it was said, thou shalt not commit murder. Okay, but I tell you what, anyone who hates his brother is guilty day of judgment. Right? So again, Jesus is saying, as far as God is concerned, you know, that's the same thing as murder. And so while there may be someone who has not physically taken someone's life, perhaps they have so destroyed someone's character, okay, that that person can't get a job to support themselves and their family or what have you. Okay? And don't see anything wrong with that. I actually, on one occasion in my, when I was in college, I'll just put it that way. Won't describe where. I was in college and had some very serious run-ins with the dean of students at the school over issues and so forth. And I confronted the dean of students with the sin he was involved in, and couldn't get anywhere with him. I told him, I said, I have no choice but to go and talk to the president of the college about this. And he told me, if you do, I will ruin you. Okay, now this is a brother in Christ. Okay? And that's the kind of thing that James is talking about here. You see, you try. Now, he didn't do it. He didn't succeed in that, obviously. But my point is, that was his intention. You see? He wanted to make sure that I wasn't ever going to get a preaching job somewhere because of my confronting him and dealing with his sin problem. So, and that's the kind of thing James is talking about. It may not necessarily be physical murder, but it's the attempt to ruin someone and to hurt them in those kinds of ways that fits in there. Brian, you had your hand up? Or Dale? Somebody back there had a thought. Oh, I'm sorry, Wes. I know I saw a hand go up there somewhere. And you're exactly right, and we're gonna come to that specific point, yours and Brian's both here in just a moment here. So keep that thought in mind there, because you're exactly right. And again, doesn't that make what James has wrote all those years ago applicable to us today? Okay. So basically, you know, James's indictment of the rich here is showing that first of all, their sins are many. Okay. And that they should expect nothing less than to face God's righteous judgment for their behavior. Okay? They will stand in judgment before God. He is God, as we've said, of everyone, whether you acknowledge Him or whether you don't. Okay, Ray? Years ago, it's in the book, but they haven't read it.
And you read it, you don't believe it. You know.
Okay.
You know, I'm sorry I did it. No, you saw me back on.
Okay. All right. Yep. We don't seem to learn, do we? Okay, here's a question. After considering these words that James has given to the rich about that, we need to ask the question, honestly, is it I, Lord? Okay. Let me ask you this question. Just how rich are you? Okay. By Paul's standards, I don't know if you realize this or not, by his standards, we're all very rich. Okay, look over in 1 Timothy 6, beginning in verse 6. Paul says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and we can take nothing out of it." Look at verse 8. "But if we have," what? "Food and clothing, we will be content with that." People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. So, you know, you think about what Paul is saying here and the standards that he is laying out. If we have more than enough food and clothing, then we're rich. Okay? I don't see anybody sitting here naked. So we all got clothing. Okay, and probably everybody had something to eat this morning for breakfast, or at least you had it available to you. Say, whether you chose to eat it or not. So if we have those things, then we're well off. Okay, Colonel.
Russ, think about it. Solomon's supposed to be the richest man that ever was. How much of Solomon's treasure would he have given for air conditioning?
Yeah.
Or a pair of Jordan tennis shoes running around that sand there? How much would he have? We have all that.
Yeah.
And more.
Absolutely. We've got more than what we need, for sure. I think that's part of Paul's point. We have needs and we have wants, and we certainly have more than what we need, and so we are wealthy. We are rich. You know, notice that Paul here, you know, the desire for wealth he talks about draws people into temptation. And that temptation, I think, certainly can be the same sins that James was talking about that we've just gone through and discussed. He goes on to talk about how they are plunged into ruin. Or another way to understand that is that they have been fattened for the slaughter. Okay, as James described, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. It's not money, as many people misquote, okay, itself that is the root of all evil, and that's what people oftentimes misquote it as.
Yeah.
It's the love of money, okay, that is the root of all different kinds of evil. And then there are even, again, keep in mind, James is writing in this part, addressing those who are non-believers, but Paul mentions those who have wandered from the faith because of their wealth, or the desire or the seeking of that wealth, and it's pierced, they've been pierced with many, many griefs. So, again, it's not just those who are non-believers that are susceptible to these sins. And so it's easy for us to look at other folks and to say, you know, oh yeah, they're wealthy. I'm not. I'm a poor person. I can't even pay my bills. I don't have enough money at the end of the month, you know, kind of a thing, and all that kind of stuff. And we're scraping and scrambling every bit we can to make ends meet. And we look at ourselves as being poor. Okay? But the reality is most of us have plenty. We certainly have everything that we need. But then the question becomes, don't most of us even want more? See? Are we ever really satisfied with what we have? Great day. We're out of time again. Okay, well, we're going to have to stop here. And we will pick up in this part next week, and then we will continue on in the remaining part of James chapter 5. All right? Thank you all very much.